Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering this New Year's Eve, Wednesday, December 31st, 2014. A Sudanese warplane raid Western Bahr Ghazal, leaving two people dead, according to a local official.
Two people killed and seven injured. It was 12:30 this morning.
And the SPLM in opposition says it has created new states in South Sudan.
On the 21st of December, I have issued an order of establishment of the 21 states so that where we have control, we'll administer them as federal systems.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least two people were killed and seven others injured this morning when a warplane bombed Raja County in western Bahr Ghazal state. Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan blames the raid on Khartoum and tells VOA fellow Michael Atit the bombing is a clear violation of cooperation agreement signed between the two governments in September 2012.
Yes, it's true. Two people killed and seven injured. It was 12:30 this morning.
And how did the government of South Sudan or the government of the state react to this?
We don't have any ways of reacting rather than making a press conference, which has been done by the Commission of Raja County, condemning these things, and there is a mechanism of addressing such violations.
As the governor of Western Bahr Ghazal and Raja County also is one of the counties of the state, this might be the second or the third this year Sudan is bombing Raja County. What is going on?
I think you media, you know it better than us, because there is cooperation agreement between South Sudan and Sudan, and the two countries had committed themselves into implementing the cooperation agreement. And if there is any violations, there are mechanisms through IGAD, through African Union, there are mechanisms of addressing such violations. But on our side, we, government of the Republic, as well as the state and the county, committed ourselves for not to go back for war again in Sudan.
Khartoum government also is like accusing the government of South Sudan of using Raja County as the territory to support, you know, rebels in Blue Nile and Nuba Mountains. Is that correct?
That is Khartoum. Khartoum are trying to justify what they are doing. But what you know so far, we don't harbor such groups. What you can talk about now here is that Khartoum had bombed the county and the state this morning. This is what you can talk about.
So far, apart from this Raja County, how is the security situation in your state?
Now, in general, there is no problem at all, with exception to the threat being created by the anthrax bombs. Otherwise, the state is calm and peaceful. Nothing to mention. We have celebrated Christmas well and good, and we are preparing for the incoming of the 2015. And through this forum, we wish all the citizens of the state, as well as the entire republic, prosperous 2015, with peaceful year, whereby all the southerners would ally around the building of the South Sudan nationhood, of which every person, each individual, should feel himself part and partial of.
Rizik Zakaria Hassan is the governor of Western Bahr Ghazal State. He was speaking to VOA fellow Michael Atit from WOW this past hour. The governor of Central Equatoria State is calling on South Sudanese to work for peace in the new year. Speaking at a press conference in Juba, Clement Conger says peace will prevail in South Sudan in 2015. Health Minister Riek Guy Kok used the same event to deliver a New Year's message from President Kiir. Philip Thornaleo has more from Juba.
Governor Wani says South Sudanese must learn to live together to prevent a recurrence of the conflict that broke out in December 2013. Wani says the conflict that started in Juba quickly spread to Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile states, where sporadic fighting still erupts. He says leaders should accept responsibility for what he calls a huge miscalculation.
The foundation of our three-year-old country is sufficiently shaken. The unity which represents our only golden asset is stumbled on. The peace which is the pride of our struggle and freedom is no more. The development and economic growth which answers the ultimate aspirations of our people is erased.
Wani says the central Equatorial State government has been unable to implement development projects in 2014 due in large part to the conflict. He says the relative peace people enjoy in the state is a result of discipline and the hard work of local residents who look beyond tribal differences. He says other South Sudanese should do the same.
As we approach the new year, 2015, we must unconditionally change. We should value South Sudan beyond our individual tribal, ethnic, and regional considerations. We must value life, dignity, and peace. We must respect and honor each other. We must tolerate and accommodate the feelings and expressions of each other in groups. It is only in this context that we can be able to build a nation which is just and prosperous.
Wani says achieving prosperity in 2015 needs peacemaking and peace building. He says people must forgive each other in order to reconcile at every level of society. At the same news conference, National Health Minister Rear Guy Cook delivered a message of hope and peace from President Salva Kiir.
Let us move from this 2014 to 2015 more united, love one another, and let us all join hands in search for peace for our country. And let us avoid by all means to go down in history as a generation that caused disunity among the people of South Sudan, as a generation that has also watered down the aspiration of our people for development and prosperity.
The latest round of peace talks collapsed early this month in Addis Ababa. No new talks have been scheduled. It is impossible to know how many thousands of people have been killed since the fighting began in South Sudan more than a year ago. Both sides are accused of ethnically targeted killings, forced detentions, and other atrocities. For VOA News, I am Philip Thorne, Aleu in Juba.
The leader of the SPLM in opposition says his group is ready to administer areas under their control. Riek Machar says he has ordered the creation of 21 states in South Sudan and that the states will be governed by a federal system. Machar says the peace talks mediated by IGAD have not addressed the root causes of the conflict. He blames IGAD mediators for lacking what he calls clear agenda during several rounds of talks which collapsed in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa. Nevertheless, Riek says in his New Year's message that South Sudanese should remain hopeful about the prospects for peace in 2015.
I wish to sign a peace deal with Juba even today, or if it had happened yesterday. We want to negotiate a sustainable peace which will usher in a new government in atmosphere of good governance. On the 21st of December, I have issued an order of establishment of the 21 states so that where we have control, we'll administer them as federal systems. And where we don't have control and have own army, we will also be preaching to the people that federalism is a better form of governance that will unite people of South Sudan.
Creating 21 states sounds easy, but administering it requires money. Who is financing you to administer these 21 states?
It can finance itself. Places we will see as villages today would be towns. They would be urban centers where people will come in and get services. And in a very short time, we can transform South Sudan through its own resources.
Dr. Riek, what you're telling me now, the people of South Sudan heard it in 2005 when late Dr. John Garang was saying they want to take the town to the people. And when the country became independent, President Kiir also said the philosophy of the government is to take the town to the people. And now you're saying your philosophy is to take the town to the people. But South Sudan still remains as it was during creation. There's nothing new. What can you tell the people of South Sudan that you're doing different from the other people who were there before you?
President Kiir doesn't like even decentralization. He does not like it. He's centralist in his thinking. The idea of decentralizing even was forced on him. During the liberation, he didn't like it. I would recall in Mayoma Abun.
Let's go back to the negotiations that have been on and off in Addis Ababa for almost a year. What can you tell us are the obstacles to reaching peace during that negotiation?
I see difficulty, first of all, from the vehicle which is mediating. At times, it is part of the conflict. At times, it is a mediator. So this is a big issue. That gives Salva Kiir a chance not to seriously discuss peace. We have outlined our concept on peace. We said the first thing to do is address the root causes of the conflict in government and in the SPLM. Two, address Juba massacre, where a government kills its citizens and targets them ethnically and involves in a genocide. Three, we said the system of governance needs to be overhauled. Once you have done those, then you think of how to implement this. Then you now can talk about the government that would implement it. It would have an agenda. They want us to talk about the government, talk about positions. When the conflict exploded December 15th, I was not in government. I was not even interested to be any more in government. I said I would wait for the elections. Now the emphasis is forming a government without addressing root causes, without addressing Juba genocidal massacre, without addressing issues of accountability, reconciliation, and healing. But then, and without addressing the reforms that are needed, the new system of governance, which is a popular demand of people of South Sudan, how do you get peace?
That's Riek Machar, leader of the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to me via a satellite phone from Pagak in Upper Nile State earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, one analyst's view of what needs to happen if peace is going to become a reality in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how hard is it for you to forgive someone?
Well, Lord said we should forgive and forget. Although it's not easy for you to forget, but for forgiveness, it's okay.
Well, not so hard, because I am a Christian, so I believe in forgiveness, because I want to be forgiven by God as well.
It depends on the gravity of what the person has done. It takes time. It depends on what you have done to me. If it's something that has really, really pained me, it will take time for me to forgive, but eventually I'll forgive.
When the person regrets and asks for forgiveness, I easily forgive the person.
Every human being is very hard for you to forgive, seriously, but sometimes forgiveness is good. Like, it will bring peace. It lets it go.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The International Crisis Group, an independent organization committed to resolving deadly conflict around the world, says the ongoing conflict in South Sudan has had immense impact on all kinds of aspects of everyday life. The group's Africa deputy director tells VOA fellow Lucy Pony the two warring parties should encourage wider consultation within communities in South Sudan to achieve peace in the country.
E.J. Hogendon is the group's Africa Deputy Program Director in Washington. He says the ongoing war that started as a political dispute in Juba quickly spread across the country and rapidly took on ethnic overtones, leaving the poor people of South Sudan to suffer the consequences. He says the conflict also destabilizes the region.
So, of course, that is of great concern to the international community. also because of the immense humanitarian suffering that's been caused by the fighting. All of the assistance that's going to South Sudan is now humanitarian, emergency assistance rather than longer-term humanitarian assistance. At the same time, the war is also costing the government huge amounts of money, and all that money is largely being spent on buying weapons and paying for the security services.
And the suffering continues. Humanitarian groups warn of an imminent famine outbreak in some parts of the country if international aid groups pull out of riskier areas due to the fighting. The ICG states in a recent report that outsiders have had little success in mediating conflict within South Sudanese communities over the decades. The report recommends inclusive peace talks that bring in religious and traditional leaders who, Hogendon says, can influence the willingness of communities to implement agreements. But even that won't help if there's no change at the top.
Right now, it appears that neither Riek Machar or Salva Kiir want a peace deal. They want to essentially negotiate on the battlefield, and unless that dynamic is changed, the peace process in Addis Ababa are going to drag along. Salva Kiir and Riek Machar only have loose control over many of the armed groups that are fighting on their behalf. And unless those groups' grievances are addressed, it is unlikely that any peace deal negotiated in Addis Ababa is going to be durable.
Hogendon says, although South Sudan has had a rough start with poor infrastructure and institutions, the violence only makes the situation worse.
Clearly, things would be much better for ordinary South Sudanese civilians if there wasn't fighting. That said, South Sudan had a very difficult path to tread. It was still an extremely impoverished state with only minimal government in many places of the country. But, of course, no war is much better than a place that is engulfed in conflict.
Hogendon says the international community is stepping up pressure on the two sides to reach a permanent peace deal, including threats of imposing an arms embargo. But it has been slow going.
There isn't enough consensus amongst both the regional actors and the international community to put pressure on both sides in a cohesive way. And that is obviously undermining the leverage that the international community has.
Still, Hogendon says he is optimistic a peace deal can and will be reached if the two parties cooperate and take the talks seriously. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
Meanwhile, in Sudan, U.S. diplomats are concerned about the expulsion of U.N. diplomats from the country last week. Samantha Paul, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, says the United States deplores the government of Sudan's recent decision to expel the resident coordinator, Ali Zatari, and U.N. Development Program Country Director, Yvonne Yerley, from Sudan, and called on the government to reverse its decision. In a statement put out yesterday, Power says the decision further damages Sudan's credibility with the international community and represents one in a series of actions taken by Khartoum that have frustrated the UN's ability to meet its humanitarian, development and civilian protection objectives in Sudan. She says the U.S. raises those concerns yesterday with other members of the UN Security Council. Meanwhile, Sudan is marking the 59th anniversary of independence from British rule this week. Celebrations are being held against the backdrop of continuing conflicts in at least three regions of the country and government emboldened by strengthening economy. As VOA fellow Nabil Biagio reports, observers are at loss for a solution to Sudan's many crises.
Sudanese political analyst Mehdi Al-Jazuli says fighting between the government forces and rebel groups will continue to rage in Darfur, southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile states, even as Sudanese mark the anniversary of independence.
We're looking forward towards an outstretched war that won't stop anytime soon.
Earlier this month, talks to end more than a decade of fighting in Darfur and more than 3 years of conflict in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan states were suspended because the government and the rebels could not agree to the terms of a ceasefire. Al-Jazuli says the international community needs to step in and end the fighting.
If thought the conflict in South Sudan and the Blue Nile would be sort of settled in some negotiated form, but I think the way that things are going, either there's intense international pressure on the two parties to negotiate, or they will just continue fighting. And I think the one thing I've learned, at least, is that the constituencies, the people affected by the war, are nobody's concern on both sides.
Sudan is set to hold elections in April next year. Mr. Bashir, who has been president for more than 25 years, is running for another term in office. Al-Jazuli says the elections are unlikely to bring change to Sudan, but will be just a showcase for the ruling National Congress Party and for Mr. Bashir.
Yeah, the elections will be a management procedure for the NCP and its allies. So it's sort of somewhere sorting out internal alliance of forces in between the NCP and its partners, I think. That's the whole purpose of the elections. It's not going to go. Not going to go beyond that. I mean, you can see it already.
Even as violence continues in parts of Sudan, the country's economy has become stronger, thanks in part to falling oil prices. Analysts believe that it has emboldened Mr. Bashir's government, which in recent weeks has asked the United Nations and African Mission in Darfur, UNAMID, to leave the country. It has also expelled two top UN officials. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
You are still listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A suicide bomber has attacked a gathering of Shiite rebels in central Yemen, killing at least 33 people. Today's blast happened as people were celebrating the birthday of the Prophet Muhammad at a cultural center in the city of Ibb. The provincial governor was among those wounded in the attack. Residents and security sources also reported a second bomb in the area. Palestinian leaders say they will look to join the International Criminal Court to pursue action against Israel a day after their bid for statehood failed in the UN Security Council. Palestinian representative to the UN, Riyad Mansour, said the Palestinian people can no longer wait. He said officials will meet today to discuss ICC membership as an avenue to bring changes and charges of possible war crimes against Israel. Late yesterday, the 15-member UN Security Council voted against a draft resolution that demanded Israel withdraw from the occupied territories. And finally, the first two bodies recovered from the crash of an Air Asia flight have arrived in the city of Surabaya, where Indonesian forensic experts will identify the remains. Emergency teams have found seven bodies in the Java Sea since spotting wreckage yesterday, 2 days after Flight 8501, carrying 162 people, disappeared en route from Surabaya to Singapore. Search and rescue agency officials said waves of up to 3 meters, strong winds, and heavy rain are preventing a full air search effort at the crash site near the island of Borneo. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
To ring out 2014, we are taking a look back at some of the key moments of the year, as reported here on South Sudan in Focus. Our web editor, Karen Zaivogo, has compiled some key quotes from what has been a difficult year for South Sudan.
Yes, that's right, John. It has been a very difficult year for South Sudan. And just as we rounded out the year with an interview with Riek Machar, we started with an interview with him. You conducted that interview, Tanza, and in it, Machar unwittingly started what was to become a hallmark of 2014 for South Sudanese officials, blaming the other side when things go wrong.
Why would they blame me? They should blame President Salva Kiir, who put the country on fire. Because he had created a militia of his own, thousands of troops which he recruited without a general headquarters, and then he wanted to use them to impose his decrees, his unconstitutional decrees. So why would I be blamed for it?
Later in January, the warring side signed a cessation of hostilities agreement. Unfortunately, it was violated within hours of being signed, and the blame game started again.
I'm informed that the rebel forces are still continuing to attack our forces, and for that matter, if any violation, and if nothing is done by the IGAD, then definitely our forces will not fold their hands, but they will have to defend themselves.
Those were very serious violations yesterday by government forces. So for the government to attack our defensive positions and then turn around to accuse us is just ridiculous.
That was Information Minister Michael Makuei blaming the opposition for violating the January 23rd ceasefire agreement. And after him, we heard opposition military spokesman Lul Rai Kong blaming government forces for breaching what would turn out to be the first of many peace deals that did not hold in 2014. A few days after the cessation of hostilities agreement was signed and violated, Yu Tanzo spoke to Machar again. He said then that the rebels were now an organized resistance movement, but you noted that their choice of name might lead to a bit of confusion. Let's listen to a bit of that interview now.
We're now an organized resistance against the regime. We call ourselves SPLM-SPLA.
The National Army is called SPLA, and the political party is called SPLM, and you also call yourself that name?
Yeah, we are SPLM-SPLA. We are.
A few days after that, our reporter Charlton Doki in Juba sent us some disturbing news.
The sound of gunfire could be heard around the Giada military barracks this morning and into the afternoon.
The Giada barracks are, of course, where violence broke out on December 15, 2013, triggering the conflict that is still ongoing. This is how Michael Makuei explained the flare-up of violence in March.
What happened today in the Army General Headquarters is nothing but a normal thing that happens in any military area.
It was, in fact, a dispute over pay among soldiers. So this year also was marked by a crackdown on the media. Makuei announced the first of some new rules, and I put the word rules in quotes, for journalists. One of them was that it was against the law to broadcast or publish interviews with rebels inside South Sudan. Tanza, you asked Makuei to explain the new rule to you.
Today, if I'm a journalist in South Sudan and I interview Dr. Riek Machar, what kind of charges will be brought against me according to the laws of South Sudan?
You interview him outside, publish it, whatever you do, publish it outside. But when you come and disseminate these poisonous information inside South Sudan, it is an offense.
Under which penal code of the law in South Sudan?
Are you interviewing me on my own laws? What? I said it is an offense according to the law, full stop. It is not my duty to tell you which law. Go and look for it.
So in May, the international community gathered in Oslo, the capital of Norway, to basically plead for more money for South Sudan. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced by the fighting, even back then, and aid organizations were warning of famine if nothing was done to help. Foreign Minister Barnabal Marielle Benjamin was at the conference, and he asked donor nations to not be too harsh on South Sudan.
This is a country, it's a young country, we all know. 2 years old country. Breaking a few glasses. I'm sure some of you here are married and have children. And especially the last born one you have in a family. When it runs around, knocking glasses around. You don't throw that wonderful last born through the window into the snow or into the sunshine. You equally say, well, the mother will say, never mind, next time you'll not break the glasses. We would like to see, as far as South Sudan is concerned, ladies and gentlemen, this is an incident that has never been expected, and I can assure you with the resilience of our people, we will definitely overcome this process.
So U.S. Assistant Secretary of State responded to that with a few objections.
The crisis is much more severe than the acts of a child. We need leadership now. We need it from both sides. We need to stop the fighting. We need to begin to address the root causes of this conflict.
Lastly, 2014 saw some notable departures from South Sudan, including that of U.S. Ambassador Susan Page. She told you, Tanza, how she felt about leaving the young nation.
It's really a bittersweet departure. When I arrived here in 2011, only a few months after independence had been declared and over the new South Sudan flag raised up all over the country, everyone was optimistic. It was vibrant and just lively. Of course, it's really sad to see what's happening right now, where the country is mired in conflict and negotiations are ongoing. So we can only hope that the leaders will take charge and realize what they must do to save their own country and rescue the people of South Sudan.
And that's it. That's all that we have time for on our wrap, in quotes, of the year in South Sudan.
Indeed, that was a very difficult year. And this brings us to the end of our show for this year. Please join us tomorrow.